Welcome back, Chapsticks. You are listening to Chapter 15's Extras, where we are talking to writer, performer, Brendan Dowling. But I am Rebecca Sage Allen here with Katie Nonsen.
Hi, everybody! Chapsticks!
And Martin Garcia.
Guten Tag.
Yes, more German. And Brendan Dowling. How are you, Brendan?
I'm so good, Chapsticks. Great to hear you. Great to be here.
Hi, Brendan.
Hi. So Brendan is an old Chicago friend of ours, improviser, actor, writer. Most recently was a writer on the amazing show Work in Progress.
Yay.
And
you haven't, by the way, if you haven't seen that show, watch it.
That's real good.
You can stream it on Showtime, right?
Yeah.
Or Paramount Plus, because Paramount Plus and Showtime have
they're in cahoots.
You can get a deal for both of them.
Cool. Why don't you just give out your username and password and then hop on and
yes.
Yeah, it is an excellent show. It's so crazy how many Work in Progress people we've had on this podcast. It's really weird.
No doubt. It's so awesome.
Yeah. And were you in an episode? You were, right, Brendan?
Yeah, I was in, I think, episode 5. I played Mary Soane's sperm donor.
That's right. You were at the party.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so funny.
And that whole job took place in Chicago, but you were living in LA, right? So you were kind of...
No, we all lived, the writer's room was in February 2020, and were there for 6 weeks. Yeah, so we got there like February 6th, but like, anyway, so all the four of the writers did the final week fully remote, and then Amanda Blake Davis and I were like, no, we can weather this out. And we stayed in the corporate housing in Chicago.
You did?
Yeah,
for
yeah,
how
yeah.
much of COVID? How much of COVID did you spend there in Chicago?
Oh, just that, I think our final day, we got shut down. We were supposed to go another couple of weeks and then we got shut down. So then I think we had our last day on Friday. And then I want to say, because everything was really up in the air and I think plans kept on changing. And that was when you didn't know what was okay to do or not. So like ABD and I would be hanging out with each other, but like we would always stay, like if we went to one another's apartment, we would like stay 6 feet away and like we'd be washing our, like you'd go in, you'd wash your hands. And then like it never occurred to either of us. Like it was something that like a month later, you were like, no, you're in the same bubble. So that's fine. ABD was at one point gonna drive back with me because I had my car. She and her dog Eugene were going to drive back with me to LA, but then she ended up, I think, flying to Massachusetts to be with her mom. And then I drove back to LA. I think I left like that Sunday.
And drove back in the hotness of COVID.
Yes. And it was like Mad Max driving back. Because there were all these rumors back then about like, states might close up their borders and might not let people in. So I was really thinking that there was a time crunch to get back to LA as fast as possible. And I remember I was like driving through Oklahoma, going 90 miles an hour, being like fucking making great time, passing all these like Mack trucks. Like we're all in this together. There are no rules at all. We all just have to. And then I got pulled over by a state trooper. It is, and my back, my car is like filled with stuff because I had just thrown everything in the back, and he's like, where are you going to? And like as if like it was just a normal time and not
right,
and everybody wasn't like totally shitting their pants about whether they were gonna live or die.
right and so then so I that cost me $300.
Ugh.
But it also taught me a lesson.
And that's invaluable.
It is. And also, like, I think what people forget is that the Oklahoma highway system has this really cool program that 100% of their funds from ticketing go to like arts education programs. So that made me feel really good.
Yeah. That is really cool.
It's really cool.
I would have just donated to them. I'm going to just donate. Everyone should donate to them right now because your money's going to arts education.
And then I got, I think I was gone. I was 3 days on the road and then two nights. And so my boyfriend Duncan, like I would just drive. And then when I couldn't, around the time I knew that I was, couldn't drive anymore, I would like call him and then he would reserve a room for me at a hotel nearby. Like he would be like at command center on his laptop. <He'd> like, there's a Holiday Inn in Flagstaff in another 28 minutes. And then he would arrange it so that
that's great.
Do you, what was the vibe in hotels at that time?
Like we weren't, I wasn't wearing a mask at that point because I this probably was like March 15th or something or whatever. But I don't, I think everything was really quiet and I don't think I don't remember ever running into anybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you remember when the state trooper pulled you over and you were not wearing a mask at that time? Do you remember if he was?
No, no, he wasn't. And he,
and he never did because it was Oklahoma.
I mean, maybe, maybe. I hope, I wish him well.
God bless.
But yeah, but I wasn't wearing a mask at that point. Like, I think that was when the whatever media stream I was getting was like, masks don't really do a lot. But just,
On this podcast, because the first season we all wrote during the exactly the time period you're talking about. We have been trying to figure out like when we all started wearing masks and realizing how necessary that was. And we can't remember like
I will tell you, I think it was, I remember it must have been mid-March, maybe like March 20th, but it was around then where I remember going to grocery stores and it was like a line out the door, you know, 6 feet apart. It was very monitored and everybody had on a mask. And so it, at least in California, those rules were pretty in place pretty early, where people were really accepting, you know, to wear a mask. But I don't remember like exactly when that was. It had to have been early.
I think it was really, I think you're right. I think it was really fast when all of a sudden it went from 0% to 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that was like the whole thing. Like I have such vivid memories of like a friend of mine being like, look, my like high school friend's like brother or something works for the CIA. And it's like the world is going to shut down. And I remember being like, take it fucking easy. Like, there's no way. There's no way that's going to happen. You are so paranoid. And then like that weekend, it was like, cannot leave your house ever. Yeah. And we were like, okay, for 2 weeks, you guys, we could all do it for 2 weeks.
I can't even think about it. I just think about all the poor little kids. It's the adults are fine. It's the kids who are all totally messed up
like,
now.
This is like the second. This is like the second time in my recent life where everything is shut down. 9/11 was the other one.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where all the flights were stopped, you couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
There was. Right.
I remember Chicago was all paranoid because of the. What
the Sears Tower.
Yeah, the Sears Tower, which is now Willis Tower now, which I'm stupid.
That's so the Sears Tower is right. Fuck that.
So stupid. Anyway, yeah, that is so odd that this happened like in 20 years?
Yeah.
Twice in 20 years.
No, so I think I was like 21 during 9/11. And I remember being in Chicago. It was like my very first moment in Chicago when this happened. And also feeling like there was such a unification around that lasted for a year. And it felt like that. And I remember hoping and thinking that, especially amid like all the craziness during that time, like, oh, I bet this will be really unifying. Like this will be a really unifying event. And this will really bring the country and the world together. And like, ooh, I could not have been more wrong on that.
Nope. Yeah.
I feel like for like maybe 10 days, it was like, yeah, there was, there was like little like sneak peeks of beautification and people like, oh, the dolphins are swimming in the Venice canals. And then like all hell broke loose.
The only other time I remember a vibe like that was the Women's March.
Oh yeah. You know what? I agree with you. I do remember feeling that way at the Women's March. And then I remember making the biggest mistake of my life of like the next day going on social media and like friends of mine who would not have, you know, without getting political, never in a million years would they march in the Women's March, posting pictures of garbage cans in like LA and DC, and the garbage cans were like overflowing with garbage because there were so many people there. Mm-hmm. And I remember like CNN reporting that as like, wow, but like, look how clean the streets are and look how unchaotic is. And look at this garbage can, it's so full, but like people were putting their stuff in garbage cans. And this just tells you how many people were here, but look at the streets. They're so like, which is true. Like in being there, it's like there, it was such nuts. It was like the most peaceful thing in the world. And I do remember seeing like bunches of garbage cans piled up in very specific places because people were like, I'm not going to litter, but I'm going to put this where it belongs. And it doesn't like, and then anyway, I remember people who would not have gone to the Women's March reporting that event, like, fuck these fucking pigs. Look what they did to our city. The cities are just full of garbage now. And I was like, what the hell? Like, what a way to spin this that was so inaccurate.
I know. Well, yeah, it's like when I talked to my dad and he was like, do you know what happens at these Black Lives Matter marches? And I was like, yeah, because I've been to them. Do you know what happens at them? He's like, well, I saw in the news that I'm like, no, I'm asking about the ones you've been to. Tell me about the ones you've been to. Ugh. Brendan, what recent marches have you gone to?
I've gone to, I haven't gone to any marches, but I have been going to a lot of weddings this year. I've got Duncan and I have gone to
wedding marches. You've been to wedding marches.
I've been to wedding marches. Duncan and I have been to 8 weddings this
what?
Year.
Now, I'm not going to reveal your age. But it does, it seems strange to me. Oh. Like, I feel like that, like whose weddings? Because
that's we're what, not that's, wedding age.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. Wedding age. Like, when I was like 26, I just remember going to like 4 or 5 weddings. You know, like when everybody 100. Was like kind of in their like mid to late 20s, all your friends from college. And so whenever we tell people that we've been to so many weddings, they have the same reaction. But it was, I think it was just a mix, maybe a third of people who had gotten married during the pandemic, had like a Zoom wedding, or was supposed to get married like May of 2020, and then it got pushed to a new date, pushed 2 years. And then like a third of the people who got engaged during the pandemic, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to, I don't
second
have the
stats
for
you. Any second marriages in there?
Like who
one
are
of
these?
The, I think one of the, out of the 16 people who we have seen get married, God. One of the people has been married previously.
Wow.
And are these people in their late 30s, early 40s? Or are these people like, are you just friends with like a bunch of young people?
It's a range. Well, cause it's like two of them, I could go, probably first wedding was, all right, let me think. I'm trying to think. The first wedding. Now,
get Duncan in here.
We have like a whiteboard where we've written them because like with all our like, do we have our travel information? Do we have like a place to stay? Okay.
It's an expensive year.
Yeah. First wedding, they're in like their late 30s. Second wedding, they were late 30s. Third wedding, I think it's mostly people in their 30s. A couple of like 40, we've been to a wedding where they were in their 40s.
Gross.
I think it's mostly people in their
30s. Why is that gross?
I'm joking. I'm not married.
I'm going to have a wedding when I'm 70. And
I
everybody
can't wait.
Yes. Good.
Whether
good.
I'm whether with somebody or not.
Good.
Good. Just register. Too. Register.
Yeah, when are you getting married, Brendan?
Oh my god.
So forward, Rebecca.
We've been together, like we're very committed. We're in it to win it. We're both very like underemployed right now to throw the kind of wedding we would want to is my honest answer to that. But it was funny, like that question has not really come up ever until this week. And like this last wedding we went to, it was a really good friend of Duncan's. And so from his old job, and a bunch of people who we've been to, we've seen at a bunch of weddings were there too. And like one of them said like, oh, this is probably the last wedding of our friend group. And then he looked straight at me and was like, when are you all getting married? And I was like, oh, I don't know. But
because how long have you been together now?
Over 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and like,
congrats.
Two of them were during a pandemic. So that's like 9 years.
Yeah. Real.
Well, in gay years, it's even more.
Yeah. It's like 46 years.
Okay. So, speaking of employment, what, unfortunately, the show is not coming back.
Right.
But what have you been doing, working on, doing for fun?
I perform with Improvised Shakespeare, the Improvised Shakespeare Company.
I saw them. They were amazing.
So we do like our shows in LA once a month, and then we'll be going back. Kind of live performance got obviously diminished this year because of all the different variants, but we're going to be in Texas in a couple of weeks, and then we'll be in BC for 2 weeks.
We're in Texas. At the Kennedy's.
Oh, that's a great question. It's I think it's an hour outside of Austin. The University of Mary Hardin Baylor.
Oh, okay.
In Belton, Texas.
Okay. That's a smaller town.
Yeah.
Be careful.
That's very cool. That's so fun. And who all is in Improvised Shakespeare with you, to tell the listeners?
It's Ross Bryant, Joey Bland, Greg Hess, and Blaine Swin.
What a great group.
Yeah.
They're great. They're really good.
Great group of people. And you're living in LA. And how long have you been here now?
I moved out here April of 2017.
Oh my gosh.
And what are your feelings on LA? Because Brendan had lived in Chicago for a really long time, but traveled a lot. And before that, you're from
Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts. I knew it was East Coast somewhere. Massachusetts. Yeah. So how are you liking LA?
I love it. And I had, I kind of had zero expectations. And I think I really benefited from being the last of our like peer group or whatever to move out here. Cause by that point, everybody had gone through the learning curve of where to live, like I think everybody else had done a lot of the groundwork that I really benefited from. So like, I kind of got swept into a really great friend group with Brian Gallivan and Mike Kaczynski and Martin Garcia.
Never heard of him.
I have. I don't like him.
He's not for me, but I don't hold it against you if you do. So I really like it. I loved Chicago, but I had also been there a really long time. So I was looking for something different. And I think LA has a lot of similarities to Chicago, but it's also
next to an ocean with really good weather.
Yeah. Oh,
and like, mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause Carrot, like the weekend I was out here to look at prospective apartments, I took a hike with Holly Laurent and Carolyn Swin, not to name drop, but they both said like, oh, you're gonna move out here and you'll realize that you've had seasonal affectiveness disorder like all these years in Chicago and just didn't realize it. And I was like, oh, I think that's a little much. And then my first, like, there was like one day in April where I was like kind of sad about something, and I just went outside and it was like indigo blue sky, palm trees, the mountains of the dish. And like, I lived close to Griffith Park at that point. And so it just looked like the best place in the world. And I was like, well, life's not that bad. where I think Chicago, it can be easy to like get into a depressive state, like in February or March when it's like really gray and you don't have, like a holiday to look forward to. And my family's not there. So I think it was never going to be a place that I was going to put down roots.
What neighborhood are you in?
I actually feel really uncomfortable answering that. No. we're in Glassell Park. It's like by Highland Park and
yeah.
Yeah.
Bending. Are you, did you move here with Duncan, or were one of you out here first?
No, I'm sorry. Oh yeah, Duncan had moved out here 2016. We didn't start dating until I had been out here maybe a month or so. But Randall Haar and I moved out together and got an apartment, and we lived in Los Feliz for
a couple of years. Let's take a little off-ramp.
Now I'm remembering.
For 1 second, talk about Randall Haar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just really quickly, during COVID, I could not get enough of his Instagram.
It's the best.
If you are out there, if you don't know Randall Haar, his Instagram helped shine light into a sad world during COVID. But I kept saying to my husband, these are hilarious jokes he's doing. And my husband was like, I don't know if he's joking.
I think it's that we contain multitudes, right? You know, that like something can simultaneously be a joke and 1,000% sincere.
Yes.
I remember being... because Randall presents as a very, I'm the social chair at Kappa Sig at Ohio State.
Yep, and
like,
and clear.
Dude's dude. Yeah. Yep.
He's just one of those people that then you make an assumption about that, and then you see him on stage, and all of a sudden he's like an amazing singer, an amazing dancer. And then I also, like, when you talk to him, he has this, like, really sincere interest in like drum circles and shamanism.
100%.
And it's not like a superficial, like, oh, I read the Wikipedia article and so now I'm gonna do, but like, I think he's really devoted a lot of time to it.
Yeah, I fucking love it. I love it so much. Okay. And I think what I love about him too, and I'm gonna include myself in there too, is like, he has the awareness to know that like, this isn't for everybody. Like me talking about my drum circles and Akashic records, that's not for everybody. Not everybody speaks that language. Most people think it's, I'm crazy, but like it's kind of like improv. Like in order to make fun of it, you have to know something about it. And I feel like that's why those videos that he did were so great. Cause it's like, he knows exactly what he's fucking talking about, but he knows the world and our culture enough to know that most people think it's bullshit.
Yeah,
so that's why they were so great.
So awesome.
Do you think so often on this podcast, we become very insular and start talking about people we know and they have no clue that we're talking about them and releasing them out of podcast?
Yeah, it's funny because I think that's true. I know that's true. We absolutely do that. But that's what we... It's so much a part of your, like, it's so much of your world, you know, however long you are there, it is your world.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and are not into improv, haven't done improv, haven't lived in Chicago and done the improv scene, it is just in our show. Part of our show was Rachel Dratch.
Yeah.
And.
Oh no, they're both laughing like crazy. Wait, 2001, was she Rachel Dratch yet? Like meaning like
she was on SNL. And, okay.
I think she got hired like in 99. She had been like a featured player maybe for 2 years. And so she was for sure, people knew her. Like, and she did the show maybe for, she was in Scotland for a week and like, and did the show with us. And then I remember she was going off to do a bike tour in Italy.
Oh, was she? I don't remember that. That's cool.
And I was like, that sounds like the coolest thing. What if you were like, you had signed up for a random bike tour and then
Rachel
this hilarious person
it.
From SNL is like, I'm here too.
Well, Brendan and I were so excited she was there. We, at the time, so we would like, all right. So there were like all these like UK clothing stores and like super cheap UK clothing stores. We lived near a mall, remember? And the thing at the time were like these t-shirts and sweatshirts that had like random made up universities or dates on them. Right. Like, am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah. 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 They were just like off enough, but they didn't like it wouldn't. Yeah.
And
yes.
I think I'm probably botching. This is like 20 years ago. I'm probably botching this story, but I think you, me and Rachel Dratch were all talking about how funny they were, how everybody had these like shirts or sweatshirts with like, graduate 1965 college university.
Yeah.
So we bought her one, remember? We
It was like Boston campus or something. Because we would walk by it and we would do like these bits about like, oh yeah, I remember Boston campus. It's like, yes, it's kind of like close to BU, but like it's pretty far from BC. And
right.
And she was so like, we were so geeked out to be talking to her. And she was so gracious and so nice to us, but she did not need to be. Like,
no.
Like she could have just been like, all right. But like we were elated that she was, you know, paying us any attention. And so on our last night, I think we gave her the Boston campus hoodie sweatshirt. And again, she was, so, it's like, oh, we gave you this like kind of shitty sweatshirt that you're traveling abroad and now you have to find space for it in your luggage. And it's something you'll absolutely never wear. Who knows if it fits you.
Right.
And she was so sweet about it.
Was she living in our apartment or no? I can't remember.
I think you could say yes, maybe. I can't remember.
So strange, I don't remember.
Like that apart.
You blacked out.
I did it 10 years later. And I remember the living situations had like improved exponentially.
Oh.
But like that year in 2001, I think we were like, it was almost like a dorm room where there were like 8 cots and you were just sleeping in a bed there.
Oh my gosh. I remember someone told me to grab an air mattress and I thought it was a joke because it was literally like a pool floaty, like and I slept on it. Oh, and I pushed two together because it was barely the size of my body. And then the next day was like, way to go, taking up 2 air mattresses. And I was like, is that a joke? No, it was absolutely not a joke. And there was one bathroom we all shared, remember?
One
shared bathroom.
I was only there for 2 weeks. So
I was there the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. It was really awesome.
It was a ball. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so much fun. But it's funny that I can't remember if so many people were coming and going. It's hard to remember who was there and who wasn't there. And
I can't imagine that you would have been on SNL for 2 years and then been like, no, I'm going to stay at this. like I'll stay with like the 11 people from an improv group.
Yeah. But didn't Steph Weir do it while she was on Mad TV? I think she was staying
there
with us. She was on Mad TV.
Yeah, because Bob was there.
Those shows
too.
Don't pay that much.
But I mean
they pay more than you would in Second City, but unless you're on, you're not getting paid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Interesting.
Yeah, unless you're on the show, you're not getting paid.
Well, she was a total delight. That was really fun.
It was so funny. Like, because Yumi and Sniffin just hung out.
So much
That's
fun.
My memory that like we were just like, the three of us would do stuff and then
we went to the castle together. We had so much fun. What a blast.
Brendan, I want to talk to you about you being such an avid reader. Because it's something that I've always known about you and that you mention in passing hardly ever, and I think it's such a cool fact about you, about like your love for reading and how consistent you are with reading, and you seem to never read anything light. You always read something that's like, oh yeah, I wish I would read that. I should die. I like before I die, I need to read that book. And I feel like that's like your normal reading material. So I just want to know about where that came from.
I think, well, first of all, I'll say that I read a ton of light stuff. I read a lot of like mysteries and cozy mysteries, and that's kind of what I prefer to read. But I'll also
like Nancy Drew
like I read a ton of Agatha Christie when I was in like middle school, that, and so now I just always want to be reading a mystery. And so
look at all the books behind him right now.
Yeah, I know all, so many books.
I've read 8 of them. These are all Dustin's books.
It's terrifying.
But
Wait a second. So you read a bunch of mysteries in like junior high, but and you equate that with like, that was the happiest time of my life. So from now on, I'm just going to read a bunch of mysteries.
That's when I was reading the encyclopedia. We're so sad.
But I remember like one time at my old day job, and I was in my early 20s and we were at the airport going to a conference, and I was making conversation with someone that I worked with. I'm like, well, you know how like when you were in sixth grade, you went through like a big Agatha Christie phase? As if that was like a universal thing. And the guy the guy looked at me and said, no, I don't like, and it was really hilarious and crushing of like, why would I have just been so confident that like, well, everybody has a Miss Marple, Hercule Poirot difference. But yeah, my parents are big readers. They love to read. And so I think I just grew up with like, that you always were reading something and that, and they didn't really monitor what I read. I was allowed to read whatever I wanted. So I think that's fun where like, I read a lot of like Stephen King in seventh grade. I read The Hotel New Hampshire when I was in eighth grade.
no way.
Tell the listeners that your like day job has something to do with books.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. So my day job in Chicago, and this is was I worked at the Public Library Association, which is a nonprofit, like a professional organization for librarians. And so I was a communications assistant there for kind of forever. And when I went on the ship,
the second city, Norwegian Cruise Lines.
Yeah. I my home away from home. That's when I quit, but then they hired me back as like kind of a full-time temp 3 years later. So then I was able to work part-time for them for like the next 9 years. And then when I left Chicago, I still do like a, monthly contract with them for like 30 hours a week. So that's nice. That's my library story. Yeah.
You know, it's so funny when you say that your parents read, my parents did not. And maybe it's because they're Puerto Rican and they were like, they're not going to be a reader, but I don't know. They just didn't read.
What? Puerto Ricans don't read books.
No, but it was like everything in my house was about music.
Mm.
Dancing, parties, noise, like having a bunch of people around. And I think that's honestly why I don't read a lot, because I don't like being quiet. Like it's hard for me to be around quiet. Quiet makes me uncomfortable.
There was some study
people that makes them comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a study that said that kids will read more, not if you like give them books or not if you ask them to read, but if they see their parents reading, they will read more.
Yeah. We were like, it's very hard unless I read right before I go to bed.
Oh, I love that.
I just don't read. Like I read before I go to bed and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So Brendan, you got that chapter from Sue Salvey. Mm-hmm. And how quickly did you realize that you were going to write the end right away?
No, I think I started writing it and then I called her about something like chapter related, and I asked her a question about something, and then she was like, Brendy, I think you can just finish it. And I was like, yeah, I think I can too, because I was far enough into it where I was like, it's like what I should have done was just write the second to last chapter and then pass it on to someone. But then I also had an idea for how I wanted it to end, and it also felt like an undue burden, like a hard task to like give it to someone else and be like, hey, read these 70 pages and then tie it all together. Like, thanks. Bye-bye.
I know. I was so impressed when you texted or emailed. I forget what you did. And you were like, I think I offended it. That was like a really cool thing, because it needed it. And you could tell. Mm. Like, it was the right time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, first season, we each of us wrote an ending.
Uh-huh.
Because we were too concerned that
nobody
tell someone else to write. Yeah. Tell somebody else to finish it because of what you just said. Like, we're going to tell somebody, you know, you're up for the last chapter, dude. You know?
Yeah, right.
read this all and make it make sense.
Yeah.
But we had three different endings. It was fun.
But yeah, I love the way that you ended it, Brendan. I thought that was so cool. I thought it was so cool that you ended it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do too.
It was very satisfying.
Oh, good. It was super fun to think about, and then also like, and not be part of it at all, and then just see how like all these things that have been set up that then you could, like once I decided that I was going to end it, I was like, oh, it'll be fun to try to make these things pay off in some way, like David wanting to go bungee jumping, or all the stuff about like Nathan Lane being so funny, or the equity reps or even someone like the how specific the characters were, like the expositor. And so yeah, it was fun to know that you were writing the last chapter and then you could just make big choices so that stuff ended.
Yeah, I forgot that in the first chapter, which, well, it's technically the second chapter because Rebecca wrote the first chapter and then I wrote the second chapter. I forgot until this chapter that Veronica would refer to herself as being so funny. that she thought she was really funny. And so I loved that you put that stuff in there about like how she was just like so, so, so funny. Like even Nathan Lane thinks yeah. that she is so funny.
The funniest man ever in the history of anything.
Oh man.
So great.
That's a funny psychology experiment too of like with where you all have been living with it for so long and then to see like someone who is just reading it for the very first time, like what pops out for them.
Oh, I know. That's such an exciting sure. part. Like that's one of my favorite things when we do these is like to find out like, ooh, what like sparked for people? Like, yeah. is it something, and did it spark or did they feel an obligation to write something, you know, to follow up with something or go yeah. back to a character that we haven't seen for a while. So yeah, I think that's a big reason why your chapter was so satisfying because you had to pick what sparked with so many people.
Yeah.
That's why I also like to ask about predictions because inevitably 9 times out of 10, what we predict is not what happens at all in the chapter. It's like,
I was so close. I was
yeah,
so close.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh no, Veronica's going to die. And then I was like, no, she survived. She survived.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about making her die, but that would have been
tragic.
I think appropriate.
There's yeah, something tragic. About, but there's something.
Oh, or appropriate. What are the other?
Yeah. No, they mean the same thing, really.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. Like, she's just a character that you can't kill off. There's something about her that you just that doesn't seem like the right thing to happen to her.
Mm.
It does feel like she's James Bond or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like it could be a series of books.
Yeah. Wait, was season one Veronica Incognito also, or
no, Veronica Vermonico.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So season one was the first, and listeners, if you haven't listened to season one, you can go back and listen now, especially since we just ended season two right this minute. It's the same first chapter, Veronica, Thad, busting Thad for what he did and her talking to Enriquez and him being like, you're spending too much money. You have a next case. Then Martin wrote the second chapter and it went on a whole different trajectory. She was real. I don't want to say slutty because that sounds like I'm shaming. I don't care. She was like real promiscuous in the first one. And
she was very self affirming.
Oh yeah. She and loaded and
and she didn't. She didn't. We actually talked about it that we admired her because she just did stuff and didn't really think about how it was going to affect anybody, you know. Because we're all right. we're also like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't do this because that might hurt that person, you know.
Let me rewrite this text so it's a little bit kinder.
Yeah. Emoji. yeah, but there were really interesting similarities. Everybody was like weirdly sexually attracted to her and hated her at the same time. He had a weird attraction towards not traditionally attractive people, like overweight or older. Mm-hmm. She had a kind of dopey husband who didn't get her. She had a ton of kids.
Who was wimpy.
Was wimpy, yeah. yeah.
And everybody yeah. wanted to kill her.
And everybody wanted to kill her in both. The first one, she had a whole bunch of lovers though, right? And then it went weird. It went, well, they all do. It's great.
Hell no.
I kind of want to go back and listen now.
The critic came out.
Well, no, weird is the best compliment I can give. Yeah. But now I do want to go back and listen all at once just to the chapters. Ooh, that might be fun. Maybe I'll do a recording of just reading chapter 1 through 15 in one fell swoop.
Daniel Acker, who is the chapter 3 author of this thread of season 2, he made a suggestion to make an audiobook about it. which I thought was fascinating. What you just said of reading them in reading them all just in like one full swoop.
Oh, fun.
I know.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, what if we cast it and read it and record it?
Well, we were talking about doing like a video or something like that, but that might be fun to do, like to actually cast it. That'd be fucking fun.
That would be super fun. Brendan, who do you want to be? You get first choice.
Oh my gosh. I would want to be, I'll say Thad.
Oh, I thought for sure you were going to say Dr. Bamsey.
Oh shoot, no, Dr. Bamsey. I take it back.
Think about it. You think about it. You get first choice. You let us know.
Thad was the only name I could remember.
There are a lot of characters. A lot of characters. That's kind of, yeah, that's the hard part to keep track of. But I think in the context of reading it all at once with a cast, that'd be so fun.
That would be really fun. We could do the same with season one. So Brendan, what is coming up for you in your life? What's happening? Anything on the horizon?
Well, this is a big transition point because Duncan and I have just finished, I think, attending all the weddings we're going to this year, our eight weddings.
Hey, I was going to ask about that. I was going to ask, like, what weddings are there on the horizon?
We are invited to two more this year, but they're both on the East Coast, and it's just, I just don't think I can make it work.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then, so just enjoying Los Angeles.
So, and where will you be performing with Improvised Shakespeare?
We'll be at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., December 6th through the 18th.
That's a long run. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks. I think it's 16 shows. So it's really, we got to do that last December, and it was just, it's super fun to get to be in a city for a long time and have like a regular run of an improv show, especially. I really like that.
Yes, that is so great. And if people want to reach out on social media to find you or to find Improvised Shakespeare, whatever you're doing, where would they find that?
I'm Brendan Dueling on Instagram and Twitter, but I don't really post a lot. I always feel like maybe that'll be what I really throw myself into the final 11 weeks of the year. Yes, just like
take a note from Randall Haar. Yeah. Really get in there.
Yes. Hardcore commitment to social media.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, don't do it. Do something else.
does Shakespeare have a thing?
I think it's Improv Shakes Co.
Shakes Co.
Improv Shakes Co.
Shakes Co.
Improv Shakes Co.
I believe.
Follow them. Follow the Chapters Project podcast on Instagram. Subscribe, because maybe we will make this whole reading happen, which would be really cool. And we have not told you yet what's happening for season 3. So please tune in for that. This has been a really cool ride this season. I am so grateful Sue sent this chapter on to you, Brendan. What an awesome way to end it with a really good friend and a really good chapter. And we can't thank you enough.
Oh, this was such a ball. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brendan.
Yeah. Thanks, Brendan. Awesome. You're awesome.
All right. We love you guys. We hope to see you soon. Thanks so much for listening and stay tuned. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Chapsticks.
Bye, Velocity Chapters.